original Parliament, rather than second to come back to 2018. The suspension was signed in order, and now we'll keep this. Mr. Speaker, I do love the signed order for the freeze of the state signed order 7-1. He wants to receive the delay in the report on the table. Mr. Taylor?
Commanderism runs through the control of economic
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. critical to bring a number of people into training of functional speaker. I do wonder of which of the two who will be allegedly guilty of this. Anyway, when every master in the fabric of our schools will need to be built, the first of these schools is tested in the right hand of the problem, Notre Dame, is set to become an environment in September. And for September 2019, convincing perspective of a nation model, a nation challenge, and two new comprehensive schools on the project, there has not been an unexpected thing or anything as a result of any rapid or incidental speaker. And it is clear that this investment is long overdue. And there will be an opening convention on the front of the other schools that require investment that is also long overdue. Investment in our world, Mr. Speaker, in our children's generation, is investment in our nation's future wealth. And so we're doing everything we can in this place. We're working to deliver as many of the new schools as quickly as possible, because this is an investment that is required. Other members of this, you never think that we're doing too much. Delivering with much more third member of the Bible, the very thing. Now, remember, from the church, it can be a valid thing that puts a lot more in touch with the new constitution and the way for the treatment plan. Another important area of investment is that we're driven by the work of a tunnel under the railway. These works are progressive, and we have to take care and attention to detail. Progress with the contractor is good, despite cost difficulties. But we remain vigilant and cannot realistically expect to be tied to any deadline given the problems we have seen are previously experienced on the project, which makes commitment to every day to close the tunnel a possible to support you, something which we will not count on. But what is progressive, and what is important to us, is that the tunnel can be completed to the highest quality, so that the software is not shown change again and is built to last. The speaker on this, as with every other area, we must deliver a project that lasts and endures for generations. And like that, other possible projects that have an irrefutable deadline, such as schools and sports facilities, we will not accept pressure on this project to complete by the same day, as that might allow the contractor unnecessary leverage for us not to get the message of taxpayers. Mr. Speaker, the same reason that the driver will have to be able to report to the task of a massive increase in investment for nothing in the upper rock nature of the day. And it is not quite fair, Mr. Speaker, to then point out that in the time between 1996 and 2011, there was almost zero investment in the upper rock. That lack of investment was quite dramatic and historic. Chamber Faith has embraced that with the support of the whole cabinet. Now, Honourable Members can see the investment variances. Look at the new tourist facilities by the Waste Suspension Bridge, by the Skywalk and Skywalk, all of which are beautifully and properly designed for look even at the new railway for the country, which is the 1 meter of the hill, that is going to be installed just in time to prevent the tragedy. So we have money, Mr. Speaker, but we're spending wisely, and we're spending on things that matter to all generations of our people, on our environment, and which makes sense for our economy and our public finance. And that means, of course, spending on our health services too, Mr. Speaker. A new and independent pediatric center for our children, which will be ready next year. And a new bespoke primary care center, continued investment in new hospital services provided in Gibraltar. What better way, Mr. Speaker, to celebrate the 70th anniversary of the NHS of the United Kingdom than with more and better investments in our own health service, the Gibraltar Health Authority, everyone, Florence Nightingale. And investments also in the support of the new Carter House of London, which we have supported and which will be inaugurated tomorrow. All of that is investment in the health of our nation. How can we not pursue such investments? If I may, Mr. Speaker, I would like to take the floor there to wish the trustees of Carter House all the best for the future as they prepare for their own global magnificent community. I will unfortunately not be able to attend the opening, as I wish to remain here to listen to all honourable members' contributions. Your able to follow the House and Joe Bassano will likely be the ones who attend to represent the government. I first speak for the whole House when I wish the new Carter House all and everybody, and I express the hope that there will be as much of a haven in London for those who need it in time of illness as we see in Carter House. Part of living longer is also about living healthier. And I'm glad to set the trend to see more and more of our young people enrolled in sports. Today, we're going to focus on investing in sports and on investing in community and investing in the overall health of our community. But then we're going to see in the morning what I've ruined it that I allowed to be announced to persuade the cabinet that we can host this round of the 2019 Ireland Games in Gibraltar. But it was the right thing to do. Then we can now turn to the moment of honor, a one which has been quite a mystery up from the first of student accommodation, which will be used as accommodation for happiness. The point of those will all have to be written by them, which is an enormous error and this is time saving. So we have to know what we will do in the month of May. And when we enter the third year, as we are developing numbers for the evolution, we are financial outlays in a number of financial years, but the return will come in the following financial year. That means it is the cost in this financial year, and the benefit of income is not seen until later. It is right that in this respect, the speaker has also reflected on the gratitude of the whole community to the Gibraltar Football Association. This is only a response to them that we will be able to develop the new sporting services that will provide for all sports. They are not, with UEFA, the funding for a new national football stadium at Victoria, which is providing 16.5 million to the Majesty's government in Gibraltar were expected to be working in business by now, who were expected to be on our team. I could never for one moment believe that we were failing to speak up. Never. And I would write to constitute authorities instantly to rally, to fight, to never surrender in the face of the challenge. And instead, Speaker, we are growing, talking merely with the business and working with the United Kingdom to preserve and fight our access to the UK market after our departure from the EU and a valid guarantee of key factors that make us attractive to so many of the businesses that are standing here and that want to establish themselves. And what is the direct consequence of the hard work of the people who have the privilege to be the rest? For the ready to do so, involving every nurse in their own field, and including the Attorney General and the Financial Secretary, in the passing of the agreement that would have been able to finalize the United Kingdom, is all relevant. But that requires continued access to the UK market on single by market terms after the event from the European Union. It has been the fruit of five humanitarian, resolve, grit, growth, and genuine British friendship, partnership, and support. Arrivals increased double year-on-year increase of 19% for instant enrollment, a 20% increase in student services. And one to go, despite the challenge of Brexit and the Monarch Airlines collapse, the fact that growth is all in areas. But growth is in there, which is a clear consequence also of our ability to invest in Gibraltar to collect and promote investment in our hotels. As ever in life, you reap what you sow. Sow nothing and reap nothing. And this month, as we are reaping the consequence of our investments, is delivering jobs to our people in the Pacific Air and beyond our front space. In the last employment survey, Mr. Speaker, the number of employee jobs in our economy in October 2017 has gone up to 28,029. That represents an increase of 3.5% or 950 jobs in our economy. The Speaker is almost 1,000 extra jobs when compared with October 2016, the date of the previous employment survey. The majority of the job gains came from the private sector, where jobs grew to 2017. close down Verizon for months because full-time male employees increased by 2.3% in the same period. Wage increases in Congress and the role of the Volta reported to the House, inflation in Gibraltar averaged at 2.6% in 2017 compared to 0.6% in 2016. Rates from 2015 to 2016 were unusually low, following a low inflation trend in Europe, largely as a consequence of cheaper energy and import prices. The average rate of inflation for the previous 10 years to 2014 was 2.2%. Higher than the current average for 2018, that's down 2.6%. Inflation in the euro area ran below the European Central Bank's target rate of 2% during 2017, averaging a annual rate of 1.5%. The UK CPI inflation averaged at 2.7% in 2017, marginally higher than the Gibraltar IRP that averaged 2.6%. Since the rate of growth, the value of the pound has fallen in comparison with most other currencies, dropping by 10% in June 2016 to 2018. The continuing uncertainty surrounding Brexit continues to apply pressure on sterling, and some UK analysts are predicting that it could fall below 1 euro against the pound once the UK officially leaves the European Union in 2019. The effect of sterling separation depreciation of import prices and the recent increase in fuel prices will continue to pass through to customer prices. Are likely to keep inflation above the 2% target through 2018. This year, I report on the second full year's results following the decision of the United Kingdom to leave the EU. The year reporting on this figure is probably also a year of maximum uncertainty, and the year which we have been engaging with frequent discussions with UK counterparts, following the year which we are not able to see a final agreed position at the sensible nature of the United Kingdom's future relationship with the EU. The year has therefore given rise to more than the usual set of challenges around the region. The figures against this challenge are less than a central backdrop of our economic performance at the moment. The figure, the most figures available from the government's statistics office show that the final Gibraltar gross domestic product estimate for the financial year 2015-16 was 1.79 billion. Representing a growth of 118.64, namely 11.2%. The GDP figure for 2016-2018 is now estimated at 2.01 billion, increasing by 212.69 million, or 11.9%. And the figure, the important new figure that adds very important to this house, is that the GDP forecast from the government's business office for the financial year on March 10th, namely 2017-18, is 2.18 billion. That shows our GDP increasing by 173.44 million, or an increase of 8.6% compared to 2016-17. These figures reflect the continued strong growth of our economy, despite the many challenges that we have faced in the year, which have been part of the important account. The government's manifesto target of reaching an increase in GDP of at least 2.4 billion by the end of March 2020 is therefore likely to be achieved a year ahead of schedule. Based on this figure, we now expect to reach very close to the target that we have set for March 2020 by March 2019. This proof point that honorable members of the staff on some occasions have called to make. Indeed, I think it was the honorable Mr. Hammond or the honorable Mr. Clinton who made the point during one or other of the last two election campaigns that at the election time, we, although this is a very different way to make excitement, especially in the summer, predict the likely outcome of the growth of the Gibraltar economy, and in particular of the GDP, and that we risk getting it wrong. Honorable members have therefore been heard to meet you, because our plans were all based on those predictions. There was an inherent risk in that. So, in this figure, they were right, but I do not mind admitting it. They were right, and we were wrong about GDP growth. In 2011, we predicted that we reached GDP of 1.65 billion by 2015-16. We got it wrong, Mr. Speaker. We reached that target under a PSSD of the global stewardship of our economy by 2014-15. A whole year earlier than anticipated. In this election cycle, we want to get a bit of a wrong. We're likely to reach the target for nearly once again in the year early, 2.4 billion or very close to that by 2018-19, one whole year ahead of March. growth of just 5% a year, when our manufacturers estimated the continued average growth rate of around 7.5% to reach the target over the period through March 2020. The growth over the last three financial years has exceeded that, averaging 10.5%, a remarkable rate of GDP growth, in particular given the political circumstances in which we have been required to deal with. The result of all continues to rank amongst the fastest growing economies in the world, and economic growth is often seen as indicating an increase in the average standard of living. As a result, I therefore continue the tradition started by my predecessor, Peter Caruana, of retention of the house and increase in per capita in our economy, as it was by members of the Sunday when government is an indicator of the average standard of living of individuals in the matter. In the future way, in an answer to the world, in both student scientific measure, but it has been referred to every year since before we took over the government. This is therefore a standard metric of however doubtful value one cash flow once again provides to the house. In this respect, as I told the house the latest forecast for 2017 GDP estimate, and GDP per capita capital growth of 8.6% from the previous year to 2.18 billion. On the other hand, the GDP per capita ranking, the new consistency to the 34th position on a GDP per capita of $45,566, a very important position on a GDP per capita of $40,290. The relative GDP per capita for 2017-18 is forecast at $111,051, making Gibraltar in third position, closely ahead of Luxembourg, which enjoys a GDP per capita of $110,870, and behind Macau SAR with a GDP per capita of $122,490, and Qatar Health Service with a GDP per capita of $128,780. As I said before, the record of the house reflects my own view that these measures are not scientific because of the different methodology of fluctuating the same rates in which they are based. In our case, for such a large part of our working population not being relevant in the per capita aspect of the calculation, the numbers are mildly distorted, so to speak. Nonetheless, they are measures that the rest of the world will ask. The important aspect of this exercise, however, is the ability to appreciate that the Gibraltar economy is estimated to have grown by 8.6% in the 2016-17-2017-18 period, with average earnings going up by 10%. And this growth continues to place ahead of other small countries in the world, except Macau, but including Malta, Luxembourg, and the Nordic and Hong Kong. I turn now to an analysis of the public finances of Gibraltar. The figure level of aggregate public debt as of the 31st of March 2019 was marginally lower than last year at 439 million. This represents an aggregate debt to GDP ratio of 20% in 2017-18, down 2% from 22.1% in 2016-17. The level of cash reserves ended the financial year at around 150 million. As a result, this reflects net public debt of 324 million, or 14.86% of GDP in 2017-18. This increase is just shy of 1% from the 15.7% average of the year before in 2016-17. Because these ratios continue at a lower rate than that of the UK and most other European nations. Great Britain's debt remained unchanged at 447 million, and a reduced level of aggregate public debt reflects the balance of the general savings fund. The liquid reserves held by government ended the year marginally higher than the cash reserves, as has been expected. A full breakdown of the UK reserves in each of the where these reserves and investments will be provided as part of the annual account of government, licensed and audited on a complete mortgage. It is important for honourable members and the general public to note that our nation's public debt continues to grow in relation to the growing size of our economy. As a percentage of GDP, our net public debt is currently among the lowest of any country in the European Union. Indeed, overall borrowing is relatively low, even if we were to include the borrowing by government and companies, a practice which was commenced and established by the former administration, and which is better, as honourable members know, seems to be part of the public debt by any reference. It is important also to remind ourselves, Mr. Speaker, that the former administration established company borrowing in this way because borrowing by government and companies is served directly from the income accruing to those companies and is secured against income generating assets held by those companies and not against the information fund for the general revenue of the government. The government can take over to be committed to reducing debt service and costs, and fully engage in discussing its foreign loans and advances in historically low levels of market interest rates. In this respect, a part of ongoing management of the public debt opportunity to extend the maturity profile of the public debt are also being active in the country. Indeed, just as the most recent question time in the House, I was able to advise honourable members to the start of this facility via the government company structure in the sum of £16 million. By the party of members opposite the previous administration, at 6.8% has been refinanced by us at 2.5%. Against the CS and Red Rock, second alone, by the government company structure, that very well entered into and was more than 17 properties, a large majority of which were released as a result of our refinancing. Incidentally, because I expect them to be filing their houses. All the government companies starting shortly after summer, a classic rule in the course of the former administration stopped fighting. For all the reasons I have set out before, the past year has been politically challenging. Despite that, I'm delighted to announce the following, that during the last financial year 2017-18, we have once again achieved, and the current budget surplus would stand at £36.1 million. Double the originally estimated surplus per year. And there was a reason why we have to speak that our estimates of conservatism can be relied upon by honourable members. This also marks a crucial spiritual of our economy and shows that we continue to build on the good fortune of our first term in office. Speaker, for those who have spent 7 financial years criticizing everything that we do and predicting that our actions would not be successful, this surplus demonstrates once again that we can be trusted with the safe and successful administration of our public finances. Once again, this year, we are able to point to results to show that the naysayers are the ones who should not be believed. There have also been crime rules in 2011 are the ones who are not credible. And even speaker, if we compare our economic performance by reference to the surplus, our average surplus for a 6 year after 2011 is larger than their average surplus for a 6 year before our election. Indeed, our surplus this year is as large as their largest surplus ever. But we don't want to compare averages, because we don't want to depend on that period for those who are responsible, and neither are the parameters exactly comparable anyway, in particular given the growth in our economy that we have been witnessing then. Before these results, honourable members of opposition now find an arrogant way to move away from their ridiculous annual mindset that they somehow must have in the figures. What we're doing is demonstrating consistency in the successful management of our public finances, consistent growth and consistent spending. In this case, the election accounts for real consequences. What are the real consequences of the consistent effort that things are somehow not going as well as the figures show? A crime rule ordinary year, Mr. Speaker, is that people will no longer be any freedom to start the possibility. Additionally, we're able to show, Mr. Speaker, and the flip side of that is that we are reliable and credible in our position in these estimates as much to revenue as we are to expenditure. In that respect, Mr. Speaker, some of the money that we have to get exceeded the original budget by approximately £21 million. As a reflection of the continued growth in our economy, income taxes in 2012 by around £11 million, and company taxes were down by around £9 million, arising from an overpayment in the earlier year. Departmental expenditure during the year, on the other hand, has been very effectively controlled by the government, and this ended the year slightly under budget at £3.3 million, or 0.7% under budget. However, at the moment, Mr. Speaker, our average growth in departmental expenditure is maybe about half of the average increase per year in the same period under honourable members. That, Mr. Speaker, is a very creditable landing point in order which the government is pleased to report to the House. But, Speaker, as the previous session, and in line with our effective commitment to help the board to commit to their trust, build up its development can be totally dependent on the government as well, I am delighted to inform the House that a total sum of 50 million has been earmarked by the government this year as a contribution.
taken care of. This was originally paid out from the government to transparency. The ultimate right of our government commitment to transparency represents the presentation of the budget to the members. The presentation will be available online at gibraltar.gov.gl. The presentation is not a substitute for reviewing the estimate books, but rather an attempt to connect taxpayers with where the money that government raises from their taxes comes from and where and how it is spent. Okay, now move on to the recurrent revenue and expenditure budget for the current financial year. Estimated recurrent revenue for the year is currently at around 2,052 million. This represents an increase in revenue of over 37 million, 4.6% over the previous investment. Nonetheless, I don't know when we can see what I get to the budget revenue value amount. This will be a prudent and conservative budget. A great budget. The overall recurrent expenditure budget for the year is 228 million, which reflects an increase of around 5.2% over the 2017-18 estimate. The federal government is therefore prudently and conservatively projecting a recurrent budget surplus for this financial year of around £24 million. In the last financial year, 2017-18, the government invested around $63 million on capital purchase funded from the Improvement and Development Fund. Over $82 million was invested on work and equipment, and over $44 million was invested in specific capital projects. That includes $5.75 million on the capital of the frontier, including the retention of works in the tunnel, and $18 million in the relocation of a number of NAD estates. This is one of the largest projects of property going on the market and being awarded. Over 100 MOD properties have been tendered for by aspirational Gibraltarians who can invest up the property ladder. We are therefore continuing to spend money building new homes for the MOD, and that spending will release the MOD properties which have already been tendered for by Gibraltarians in some of the most desirable locations in our geography. The income side of this equation will not, however, be visible uses estimate. Completion of the sale of MOD housing will occur in the following year, as we could say, financial year management companies. There are also private capital projects funded through the government and companies. These include a number of projects that have now been enjoyed by the community and have been taken to as part of the daily life of our communities as they have been there for years, such as the Midtown Car Park, Charles Town House, and Master Road, that has recently been handed over to tenants. The biggest expenditure budget of the Improvement and Development Fund for the current financial year 18-19 is around $72 million. The capital investment in water equipment is estimated at over $18 million, and the provision for investment in other government projects amounts to over $53 million. Those are investing $7.5 million in our roads and parking projects with the ongoing construction of a tunnel across the runway being a key feature. We need to have more for the continued relocation of the United States. $1 million for infrastructure works for new development, including the new affordable housing projects. It's further $40 million for our business program of facilities to be ready for the Island Games, which will be an important legacy in supporting the competition in the years to come, and further provision to complete other ongoing capital projects. So, Mr. Speaker, an important part of the revenue assets of the year reporting on, and the deal we are estimating for, comes from the collection of corporate and personal taxes and economic operations in our economy. And I would say that this was not so easy, but we have, and would have appreciated now in the financial year 2017. The income tax office has continued to improve the process for the assessment of collection of taxes in Gibraltar. The total figure of taxes collected amounts to $277 million, broken down as $156 million in personal taxes and $111 million in corporate taxes for the year 2019 and according to the House Bill. This figure is anticipated to rise to $295 million in the current financial year 2019, broken down as $165 million in personal taxation and $130 million in corporate taxation. And a more efficient assessment and collection of taxes also having an immediate plus side for individual taxpayers also. The income tax office has in the past financial year paid out an historic and unprecedented amount of £15.3 million in refunds to individual taxpayers. I'm pleased to inform the House that the income tax office is well on course to achieve the paramount objective of addressing the hugely important particularly in issuing taxpayer final assessments and the payment of refunds which will arrive to the result. This is a significant accomplishment by the income tax office and one I am proud to report on. Mr. Speaker, for the first time in 20 years, and people have been able to announce that taxpayer assessments have been right up to date. In fact, at our most existing subtract that we already have a speech assessment in relation to a 16-17 tax bill. That is to say, we're now in the case of including for our most disputes, the tax rate and repayment on the key financial year. So the context of the regular expenditure estimate, it is particularly important to highlight that to report to the House that since the refund program was implemented, the government has already spent £25 million in addressing the year's tax check. This is the estimate of a further $15.5 million the financial year 18-19 in order to take this project further to completion. Honourable members can see that the state statement segment 1 of the recurrent consolidated fund charges required in section 14 of the Public Finance Interim and Audit Act is on page 16 of the book at the bottom. And indeed, it's true that such a thing is interesting to be specified by the income tax office, but in order not to hold up the budget or attach that person that had moved quicker than we expected, we would be able to arrest it. The government spent an additional $5.5 million over the allocated amount in rebates in the last financial year 2017. We spent an extra 55% over the allocated amount for the last financial year, which we additionally allocated to the budget in order to repay the taxpayers. Never, Speaker, has any government ever allocated so much to the public and to the public. This is what they have to the taxpayer. This is not about holding on to their money, but returning it in a structured and ordered fashion to ensure the right and fair balance is maintained between repayment and carrying out the proper and correct assessment. And in this respect, Speaker, we continue to see government into the ultimate income tax office. And by the end of this year, we expect to see the implementation of online services for registration by PD1 and self-employed individuals, the minimum tax returns and payment for tax and social arrears. The completion of these initiatives will inform the final result in the digital tax office, offering a seamless and streamlined interface to the general public. $16.7 million, all of which has been achieved in just 1 year. Just in 18 months. The overall investment in debt, both governments, and comparing figures from a 31% of $1 billion to the 31st of March 18, actually 21 million. And people need to figure not only will they serve that significant reduction, but I would also highlight that the central area here is actually ensuring that current payments are received in a timely manner. This success is due to the excellent work of the men and women of the central area unit. They work closely with all government departments, all of whom now understand that we must strive to reduce this and ensure a timely collection of current payments due. All now understand that the rather fair attitude of the party of honourable members of this was bad for the voter. It was bad for those who created their views, and it was not fair. The men and women of the central area are sometimes insulted. They are sometimes threatened. They are the receiving end of unpleasantness from those who have failed to pay their dues. But under the effective and unafraid leadership of Lindell Barry, they ensure that those who owe money pay because that is the fairness that we owe to those who do pay on time. I extend to the people of the Central Region the sincere and respect of the Canada that I lead and of the whole community. The same sentiments for the work being done by the Minister for Housing and all of the people of our housing ministry that invest in respect of arrears of housing rents. The housing department has also very successfully implemented the arrears recovery strategy, which was commenced in 2015. The balance of the rent arrears will expire in 2016 from just the expected 6 million. In the relatively short period of 36 months since recovery of arrears commenced, the balance due is now 4 million. £112,273. That figure in particular reflects not just the recovery of arrears, but also a reduction of accrual of arrears. Mr. Speaker, recovery of arrears of rent is not popular and it is not controlled. In some instances, discretion has to be applied because of the circumstances of the individual who are falling into arrears. In some cases, estimation may be wrong and releases are available have not been factored in and have to be deducted from the headline liability. In all cases, it takes a politician with courage to do the right thing and to pursue a meritorious case of non-payment rent. The High Representative has shown that she has the capacity and the ability to pursue such a policy and that she does so with the full support of the government, and I hope the whole of the South, and indeed the whole of the community. I would also like to report to the House that under our leadership, Mr. Joe Hallow, the Gibraltar Savings Bank continues to grow. The debt of the Savings Bank has continued to grow, and this is the figure that has been made at the close of the last financial year. The result of the bank has continued to grow further to reach over 41 million by the end of the current financial year. The deposit base of the Savings Bank remains at over 1.3 billion. The figure of the Savings Bank continues to provide an excellent range of saving products. For our communities and leading companies that were established over 130 years ago. The Gibraltar Savings Bank will continue to provide savings products as well. Our community will continue to offer special rates of interest to our pensioners. The bank is also working on improving services and offers to savers by introducing the latest available development in banking technology. This complements the services that are now being provided to the community by the Gibraltar International Bank, which includes a full range of retail banking services, including mortgage finance to prospective enrollment and commercial lending to our local businesses. In fact, Mr. Speaker, I'm delighted to be able to report to the House on the growing success of the Gibraltar International Bank. Operating at arm's length from government, the GMB has grown beyond our expectations, and I would like to congratulate and thank the Chairman, the Board, the CEO, and all those that work there. That has become an integral part of Gibraltar society and the Gibraltar proposition. It is because of this work that the government took the view to invest in further amount of 30 million in the capital and bank over the last 4 months by the Gibraltar Development Corporation. Given the answer to the tradition, it is quite an appropriate investment, and the money was sourced from the 300 million we raised through an institutional investment in Gibraltar. The bank needed this capital to meet the speculative regulatory financial ratio, which arose given its expanding portfolio of business. In other words, Mr. Speaker, the bank needed an extra 30 million because of the success of its business model, not because it lost money that we want to embrace. I'm very happy to be able to tell the House on the spectrum as I respond to the last week from Frank Anatel, 20,897 accounts. Year to date deposits of an average of 425 million. And their loan book now stands at £204 million. And most important of all, the bank has turned its first monthly profit on the prediction it will turn the profit for the full year that will close in December 2018. It's quite remarkable for a relatively small bank that was no more than a manifesto commitment from the first investment, and which we've created also to deal with some of the retail banking challenges our community faces. And so I'm spending time beyond our shores and helping provide banking support to some businesses from the Falkland Islands that are struggling to obtain banking services and have approached the GIB for assistance. The accounts for the year ended the 31st of December 2017. Will shortly be made public. Those who want can then obtain a copy to send it to their accounting partners in person. And now turn to the specific budget measures for 2018. Before I come out and follow the changes to importance, I want to inform the House that this year, in carrying out this exercise with the collective company of their financial strategy, we have realised that there remain a number of anomalies and inconsistencies in the structure of the present day. This will be noted by the Board of Europe and also the Regulator for Business and the Chamber of Commerce, who have both raised the same issue with the government. To the present purpose of the Speaker, I will ask you for an exercise to be carried out with a view to see if the system can be recognised. This will lead to there being a smaller number of parents than the client. Commerce will then be aligned to those parents in a more consistent manner. My expectation will be that the outcome of this review can be announced during the next few budgets. The following changes are important to be introduced for the immediate effect for otherwise indicated. Speaking of the government's continuing efforts to address the problems arising from tobacco and smoking generally, to further curb antisocial behavior, and to better correct, monitor, and share information, and to better prevent the possibility of illicit tobacco activity arising, and in consultation with the country's customs, I will be introducing further amendments to the Tobacco Act. This is designed to ensure the licensing, importation, and exportation, storage and conservation of cigarettes, as well as penalties and collections for the facility, applied to all tobacco products generally, rather than only or mainly to cigarettes, as is at present. These will assist also in controlling the public order issues that can arise if the trend in this commodity is not properly regulated. Tobacco licenses were last partly increased from considerable years ago in 2005. These will now be increased with immediate effect that follows. The fee for a new wholesale license will increase from £1,000 to £20,000. The fee for a renewal of a wholesale license will increase from £300 to £10,000. The fee for a new retail license will increase from £150 to £5,000. The fee for a renewal of retail license will increase from £5 to £200. The fee for a new retail storage license will increase from £50 to £5,000. The fees for a renewal of retail store license will increase from £15 to £5,000. The fees for a new transportation license will increase from £50 to £250. The fees for a renewal transport license will increase from £20 to £250. And the fee for a tobacco import permit will increase from £150 to £1,000. The last condition of tobacco was granted in April 2014, and that date we increased the per carton of 200 cigarettes from £12 per carton to £13 per carton. That change has followed a series of changes starting in July 2011, when we increased the duty from around £8.55 per carton. As we around the speaker, because at that time duty was set on a hybrid basis, which included the calculation based on the rate. In that date, currency fluctuations have made duty necessary in the case of cigarettes harder, as the effect of such increases in the market price of cigarettes has been harder to quantify with certainty because of the currency volatility. To begin, Mr. Speaker, I want to see a deeper and wholesale change in our attitude to tobacco duty. The help of our industry requires that we should ensure that we are not making offensive measures to dissuade people from smoking. Not only are we extending our tobacco provisions beyond cigarettes for all tobacco products, on attention to the rollout of international conventions on the use of tobacco, and we are looking at an escalation of duty which will make high-speed retail tobacco prices, cigarette prices in particular, less and less attractive. But that means it's cheaper. As from midnight and last night, the use of cigarettes will go up by £1, from £13 per carton to £14 per carton. And this is the secret. The weekend rolling tobacco will also be increased from midnight last night by a third again, by £15, from £45 per kilo to £16 per kilo. Also from midnight last night, Mr. Speaker, I will triple again the import duty on the water-fired tobacco from the current £15 per kilo to £45 per kilo. This will prevent another consecutive increase in import duty on this particular tobacco-based commodity. Duty was based on an ad valorem formula until 2 years ago. I introduced duty at £3 per kilo in the 2016 budget measure. Last year, we upped that duty to £15 per kilo. This year, it is tripled again to prevent Gibraltar being used as a place to create an illegitimate market in this commodity. Given the price of the increase, to avoid companies selling themselves with unsellable quantities of the product, the collective customs will have a discretion in the expense price that merchandise has already been ordered and is in the delivery stage, or the quantity already in Gibraltar and Bond is up to 10 cents, to only be used at £15 per kilo for that particular quantity only. Because this shows that diesel can emit more toxic pollutants than other fuels. That is the main reason why we decided to pursue an LNG powered power station. That will considerably improve air quality in Gibraltar as we shut down our existing diesel fired at stations and temperature facilities. Diesel will in coming months become a fuel we use in the generation where it is taking our fuel fired engines only in extremis in an unanticipated event of a failure of LNG supply. Additionally, and in line with our policy to protect our environment and to improve our air quality, we have exempted the future of electric cars to promote them protection. The other side of the equation must be to increase duty on the most polluting diesel and petrol vehicles and their fuel. But before we increased duty for diesel, the highest pollutants last year. The increase we implemented did not, however, affect the quantity sold. Additionally, we have not increased duty on our leather fuels in 2010. Accordingly, Mr. Speaker, from midnight to night, duty on the importation of diesel will be increased by 12 pence per litre from 25 pence per litre to 37 pence per litre. Duty on the importation of diesel premium will be increased by 11 pence per litre from 23 pence per litre to 34 pence per litre. Duty on the importation of unleaded 95 will be increased by 6 pence per litre from 39 pence per litre to 35 pence per litre. And duty on the importation of unleaded 19 will be increased by 5 pence per litre from 29 pence per litre to 34 pence per litre. As the whole market of both hybrid and electric vehicles has evolved, I've over the years provided several direct incentives, unrelated to fuel duty, to encourage people to move away from vehicles that rely solely on the internal combustion engine, or to those that provide clean alternatives. The government is led by example. Over 4 years now, the official Q1 vehicle is the full electric Tesla Model S, which even Jimmy now feels that this is different. I will do more of this incentive item today as follows. The government will seek to improve on the UK's ambition of 50% out registration of new vehicles with internal combustion engines by 2040. The Foundation International has called for that deadline to be brought forward to 2030. Already, the Scandinavian car producer Volvo has announced that in 2019, that is the same year, it will stop producing vehicles that have only internal and internal combustion engines. Between 2019 and 2021, the firm will introduce 100% electric models, and ensure that the rest of the conventional diesel engine range have a hybrid engine as well. This is the first, or was rather, the first major manufacturer to make such a bold move. The same announcement has now been made by General Land Rover, which will manufacture only electric or hybrid vehicles from 2020. To do so next, will offer every single model it produces an electric option from 2025. The people of the is that every manufacturer following suit and the electric technology will soon be made. The internal combustion engine is not obvious, but it is designed as the propulsion mechanism for private vehicles. In the circumstances, the government will implement the following measures. Vehicle registration for private vehicles powered solely by internal combustion engines will be prohibited in Gibraltar by the 1st of July 2030. time fueled by diesel will be prohibited by a mandate the 1st of July 2030. That means that diesel hybrids will not be ready to be from that date in 2030. Only hybrids where the internal combustion engine element is not fueled by diesel will be ready to be rolled from that date. Both of these measures apply as much to new vehicles as to second-hand vehicles being registered for the first time in Gibraltar as on the 1st July 2030. As of the 1st of July 2035, Gibraltar will only allow the registration of fully electric vehicles where the propulsion of the vehicle does not in any way rely on the internal combustion engine, whether fueled by diesel or unleaded petrol. None of these measures will apply to specific vehicles as already defined in our release. Although these things are far in the future, it is important that we legislate now so people understand the effect of the choices they are making for the future. For the next 36 months, any individual taxpayer who installs a mechanism for the electric charging of a vehicle in their home or in a passive central garage owned by them will be able to deduct the first £2,000 cost approved by the Commission of Taxes of the installation of that mechanism against their tax liability. Mr. Speaker, with the reason that the duty on diesel energy under 1495cc will be an additional 10% on top of the duty that would otherwise have been payable in importation. So perhaps we'll be seeing any vehicles already bought or an order are not covered by this application of the provision. At present, branded vehicles do not pay duty unless they are imported privately where they attract 5% duty. Hybrids are apparently also eligible for a cashback of £1,000. All electric vehicles pay no duty irrespective of how they are imported and are eligible for a cashback now of £1,750. This also applies to electric forklifts. In order to further encourage the purchase and pooling of electric vehicles, the cashback on hybrids is now reduced to £250 for vehicles, although the import duty will remain as new. The cashback on all electric vehicles is increased to £2,500 and the import duty will remain at zero. A new cashback incentive of £150 is introduced for all electric motorbikes, and a new cashback incentive of £200 is introduced for electrically assisted bicycles with half a throttle when the electric engine cuts off at a speed of 25 kilometers per hour. And finally, in relation to motor vehicles, Mr. Speaker, the importation of non-classic used cars into Gibraltar does not assist the object of seeking that the fleet of vehicles in Gibraltar should be the most modern and environmentally friendly possible. As a result, the importation of used vehicles will attract the same group, whether it is imported by an individual or a dealer, and will remain as it is today for individual importations, not dealer importations. I want to thank the Honourable Paul Arun and former member of the South Selwyn Vienna Speaker for their diligent work in the development of the measures relating to electrically powered bicycles, which is designed to make cycling attractive even for those in our community who have to negotiate to live in their youth. A demonstration that background political differences will not prevent us from working together in future in the common interest of our community. For at least the legacy problem is caused by recklessly using silver with plastic, is something that has rather been brought to the fore by programs by the UBC's customers Blue Planet and Sky Space and Rescue campaign. The government has always advocated renewables and concerns on how our actions affect the planet, but it will be crucial to future generations. In our conference with the speaker, I note that disposable paper products are presently being charged at a higher duty of 12% than plastic. Disposable products which are presently charged at 6%. Given what we now know about the effects of single-use plastic on our oceans and our planet generally, this cannot be right. As a result, the government will eliminate import duty on disposable paper products such as paper, straws, plates, caps, disposable paper bags, and caps. We will be removing effects also increase duty on their plastic disposable equivalents to 200%. The duty on biodegradable plastic bags at the same time will be hard. With the future of being able to revision to duty on spirits, cider, and other alcoholic beverages since 2010, some 8 years ago. Indeed, Minimum wage will increase in the market to 16p, by 16p to 16p. annual rate of inflation of 2.5% in April 2018. This increase in commitment to growth, economic growth, and unfair, and in the most below where we believe this will be, having our team on federal, given the GDP growth that has been falling for this month. In the United Kingdom this year, the minimum wage for over 25 has gone up by 4.4%. In the second part of the city of Gibraltar, the national minimum wage will be increased by 4.5%, or 20p an hour to 6.5. As a result, the minimum wage will have increased by just 5.5% in our 7 years now. I can remember when I was a boy, and a month sometimes was not as long as a week. And I therefore commend this meeting to the minimum wage of the House and to the whole of our community. We must walk in the shoes of those on the minimum wage as much as we must factor other matters into our calculation of what this fundamental parameter of our economy should be. Each of the measures I have announced to date have been prepared with the end in mind. We don't need to open up more for business or new business, which are another reason I have explained behind the decrease in income which has been applied. We have to be ready. It seems to the world and for our position to continue to demand growth and improved economic data. Additionally, we have to be prepared also in the event that Brexit does not go well. Not because we think it will not, but because we have to be ready for that eventuality. But the future is about the government to take certain steps to rebalance the economy, the right and the vulnerable aspects of what will be faced in the next financial year on. For us, the most important aspect of that rebalance is the protection of the private sector. In which the utilitarians are the dominant nationality, and which is dependent on the revenue yield from the private sector activity and employment level. The sustainability aspect of the private sector protects our public sector workers, we can tame the cost of the public sector payroll, and start reducing the gap between the higher and lower paid in the public sector, and between the public and private sector chain. In order to do so, Mr. Speaker, public sector pay will go up this year by the lower of 2.5% of the individual pay rate, or 60p an hour. In effect, Mr. Speaker, this 60p an hour cap on the pay rise will kick in on basic salaries over £46,000 per annum. Even at these levels, the increase will considerably exceed average inflation. Under the former administration, Mr. Speaker, we also saw the expansion of the public sector with the creation of many companies, agencies, and authorities outside of the pay structure of the civil service, and for many relatives to be engraved, altered without any reason or logic. To that effect, the government will engage in a thorough review as quantitative exercise to review senior public sector salaries and their affiliated individuals. The last such review was carried out by Uncle and Robert in 1983. All of the structural changes that have occurred since then have created myriad distortions that altered the framework, and the review is now once again required. But we have only to doubt, Mr. Speaker, whatever the recommendations that we may be, no existing officer salaries will be affected. All we can do is receive at least their existing salaries into retirement, whatever the recommendations in the review are. As I reminded the House last year, Mr. Speaker, the government is committed to reform of the social insurance fund. However, amending these funds is not advisable at this point, given the options available to government may be greater once the UK and Gibraltar have left the EU. It is nonetheless important and responsible to recognise the reality that the system needs to be imbalanced. It is presently being balanced by relying on an annual advance in government. It is neither right nor prudent for government to absorb this ever-expanding gap between the contributions received by the fund and the permanent payment. And therefore, cannot ignore the problem into the eventual reform. The people who are indulging from the interest of transparency that others keep encouraging the fund. I will take a moment to explain to the House how the pension benefit funds work, because the funds that sit in the background few understand it fully, and from my honourable colleague, the father of the House, who keeps a very watchful and keen eye over. The funds, however, impact on all of us, from those working to those in our community who have contributed to it over their working lives and are now retired, and to those who unfortunately, because of their circumstances, may need to rely on. During the last year, after the increasing contributions by 10%, the share of contributions collected based on draft figures was around 30 million, and government provided the fund 7 million for the consolidated fund, which combined with other revenues to the total contribution of the fund to 48.2 million. In the same period, all the expenses of paid were 34.1 million, with the balance of other payments was circa 4.1 million, taking the total to 38.2 million. These 4 million represents payments of costs and other key benefits provided to those in vulnerable in our society, such as disability benefits, unemployment benefits, widows and parents allowance, etc. Vulnerable the last few years, but despite that increase in contribution last year, the expenses kept increasing, despite government deficits. We're coming back briefly to 2008 and 2009, only 9 years ago. The old age pension of pay amounted to 15.5 million, or half of what they are receiving. Total benefits and property were 19.1 million, and the initially exactly half of the 38.2 million that we were receiving, but we have paid 100% more. And yet, in that period, in the increase in the personal share payment, there have been no more than 10% increase. While the increase in the payment is standard, it's been expected. It is not that anyone should, but that in fact, the care we provide for our elderly community, the children, and other social services, and the fact that people are living longer. As an example of this, in 2009, there were 8,213 benefit persons eligible to draw a pension and the lawyer's pension. Whereas by March 2018, the figure has increased to 11,693 persons. And of course, the amount of the pension payment is increasing by 11%. But it is a positive fact of life, Mr. Speaker, that people are living longer and successive governments are trying to help those with problems who need the assistance. Who may kill their society without blood alone? A responsible thing to do is therefore to refer the fund to proper funding. The irresponsible thing to do is to just somehow cut things to the benefits eventually, or the vulnerable, or after we did not increase the contributions, and that the wider tax savings should make the effect. In order to prevent the proposition that government or the wider tax base is not solving enough of the cost, it's clear that we are, in fact, on the move. It is clear that the government's direct contribution on the consolidated fund has made something of 7 million over the last 3 years. It would not be true to say that government has not put its shoulder to the wheel to meet the cost. In order to understand this, one needs to understand what happens to social insurance payments. When payment needs to be destroyed, cost comes to fund healthcare, which is the case, and with the balance going to the statutory benefit fund. So last of all, with increased contributions in social insurance payments, we also moved the allocation from 70% to fund healthcare to 65% to fund healthcare. This means that the increased arrivals in the ship is fund 5 million has been met by government with the need to fund the shortfall in the additional contributions in the GHA. So I also think it is equitable for employers and employees to also get a share of funding this cost. It is therefore, of course, for some of us, but also with a burden of understanding that this is the right and responsible thing to do if we believe in universal healthcare and the welfare of health, that I have to then to announce an increase of 10% to social insurance contributions. I also want to shift in contributions from 65% being ultimately directed to the GHA to 60% being directed to the GHA, thereby having government contributing directly in funds and involving some of the costs of the increased directly also. We know the government continues to engage with the Chamber of Commerce and the Federation of Small Businesses to upgrade them on these matters and welcome their understanding of the need for no doubt unwelcome but necessary increases in the state of the in the future, under a system that we expect to be able to implement, contributions will be expected to increase only by inflation. The effect of the changes announced is this: temporary contributions will increase at a maximum by 2.75 per week. From 27.50 to 30.25. Now, the contributions will increase by 1.5 per week from 40.50 to 15.95. Employers' contributions will increase at the maximum by 3.65 per week from 36.50 to 40.50, and self employed contributions will increase at the maximum by 3.35 per week from 33.5 to 36.85 pounds. At the same time, and because the government's continued commitment to reduce the level of personal taxation, especially for the lower paid members of our community, on the 1st of July, taxpayers with a household income of £11,200 or less will be brought out of the taxation system altogether and will pay their income tax. This measure is a figure of about as much as taxpayers in both the allowance based system and the subsidy growth in the system and represent a further increase in this threshold, which has steadily increased to the first of the year to £8,000. We have delivered increases in respect of this of £3,200 or 40% more to bring more and more of the low paid out of the tax burden. Also, according to the land pressure commitment, taxpayers under the allowance for the system will benefit from an increase in their personal allowances, which is at least in line with inflation. As a result, for $3,000 will increase. So personal allowance will increase from £3,300 to £3,305. And spouses who are partners allowance will increase from £3,300 to £3,305. The one-third parent family allowance will increase from £5,425 to £5,575. So the national allowance will increase from £5,150 to £5,290. The child allowance will increase from £1,155 to £1,165. The child studying abroad allowance will increase from £1,290 to £1,255. The dependent relatives allowance for the relative independent living daughter will increase from £301 to £325, and for the relative living outside the country will increase from £210 to £215. The blind allowance will increase from £5,155 to £5,285, and the medical insurance allowance will increase from £5,155 to £5,285. But the figure after this has resulted in confusion between the disability allowance and the disability benefit, where both ended up being called the same thing on allowance. The disability benefit was not increased. This year, to address that, the disability benefit reversed to its old nomenclature. A lump sum representing the annualized amount for last year's inflationary rise will be paid immediately to all who were in the CTS last year, pro rata for whatever portion of the year they were entitled to pay. This year, the benefit will increase by the rate of inflation portion. The old extension will also increase in line with inflation. Because, at present, companies with tax losses are only able to use those losses against future profits. At present, these losses can be used within the business so long as there is no change of ownership and the change of business during that period of 3 years. The problem that some large companies are experiencing is that they cannot carry out instructions of their business, and once they start from the business out to other group companies, the tax loss is effectively lost. In order to facilitate improvement structures, which are increasingly common with some of the consolidations we are seeing across the sector, I propose that the finance bill will be contingent to allow the transfer of such losses or restructures, so long as there is no change of ultimate ownership and a change of business during the previous 3 years. The commission will therefore allow losses to be carried forward against the business, even if the business is transferred to another company and then sale of ultimate ownership. The legislation will include receiving an isolated agreement so that such funds are only allowed in a case of legitimate use of structures, which is specifically not allowed for the use of accumulated losses of one type of business to be offset against future profits for a different type of business. And since the comments have been made in erroneously suggesting that changes to the damages act may be unfair on the basis that our losses of damages will not be able to plan or provide for their long-term care. For democracy, there is to be correct. In order on the left to provide support to those in these very difficult and sometimes tight situations, the government will direct the Gibraltar Savings Bank to create a product or bond to allow our awardees to sum payments from personal injury claims or death, including death in service payments and insurance payments arising from the death of a spouse, to pay interest rates if they were retired persons and therefore eligible to invest any such sum distributed in such a product, thereby availing themselves of the higher interest rates that offer them to pay payment types. This will be a special bond for such a purpose only. The conditions to be satisfied before monies can be accepted by the savings bank for such a debt account to attract pension rates are as follows. The investment should be limited to the amount of the award from personal injury or death and interest thereon. The investment from the account must be open and must be the awardee or next to the case of death. In both cases, the individuals must be included in the case of death and must be Gibraltar residents to be eligible for the treatment, and payments must be made by the insurance company or the employer, and must be allowed to be paid by the defendant and settlement of a claim on awarded by the Supreme Court of Gibraltar, and payments must be certified as complying with the criteria of the Commission on Income Tax. In fact, the government has been developed affordable housing in keeping with the principles set out by the first Business Savings Bank. So this view, however, was modeled and created by the party when the government was still in power. That allows an element of speculation which is not, in our view, keeping with the objective of providing homes for our people, which are not designed to be used for speculation or for owner occupation. These affordable housing properties, with Peachtree Terrace and Moss Avenue, have been sold to original purchases at cost price. That is to say, the cost to build a property based on the area of each individual property without factoring in the value of the land or the cost of the business property. However, the cost has been well below the increase in the market value of these properties due to the rising value of general residential property in Gibraltar. This, amongst other factors, has enabled some original purchases, the market is more than affordable homes, for very large profits while the sector, which is almost no profit from the retail property being made. That is not fair on the taxpayer at large. On those on the waiting list for the home, or on those who have not been able to buy affordable property in the future. Government is better to make all options available to it under the terms of the unrelated for the state in order to curtail the levels of profit which will be made on retailers and the only means in paying for these properties. As a result, to cut those who may be seeking to flip these properties, as from today, the sale of any property sold in an affordable home for and on behalf of the government in the last 4 years, and to sell properties at beach retailers in the non-South Union, will attract a new special statute for the period of until 10 years have expired from the original purchase of the property by the original purchaser, of 7.5% of the total sale price, calculated with regard to the property sale price and any other payment partner from the purchaser to the vendor, whether in respect to fixtures, fittings, or any other payment whatsoever connected with the transfer of the property. This new special statute is not deductible in arriving at the calculation of profit under the statute. The special statute will not apply in circumstances of a forced sale, including in cases of marriage or relationship breakdown, such circumstances will be specified by the government's land management committee and administered by land property services for lending. The special statute will also not apply if a family moves to a larger property as a meritorious upgrader to another, newer, government affordable housing scheme. And a special statute will not apply to the sale of any part of the government's equity sold, so the government has retained its share of the equity in the property. Speaker, housing rents have gone up by 3% this year also. This is about 0.5% above inflation and only the second time in 35 years that rents have gone up. The increase can provide an additional about £90,000 to the government in respect of income. As a result, anyone who might have been foolish enough to suggest that this increase will in some way go to pay for £300 million financing package to secure the budget also will not be very good in mathematics. Indeed, they will have all over their face if they have been foolish enough to treat such nonsense. While we make provision for these increases, members of us have said nothing in this House other than the mark of the current legal position. He remarked that the rent increases proposed were too small or too little to have any effect. And that's what the House welcomed the increases from last time, and the Ombudsman had actually called for it. So it would be utter populism, Mr. Speaker, for members of us to now somehow try to create an unwound line which puts a role against small or modest or little increases which are outpaced by the hourly increase in the minimum wage. Please say, the increases are on average in the region of the increase in 1 hour of the minimum wage, more than proportionate and modest. Finally, Mr. Speaker, I am happy to announce that after considerable public consternation about the availability of tickets last year, this year's Christmas lottery first prize is going to be £1 million. Double the number of tickets available last year will go on generous payment on Wednesday. I want to take this opportunity on behalf of myself and all members of the government, and I assure the whole House to thank you, the clerk, and all members of the staff and the assistants this year, and with this speaking my functions as leader of the House. You have all been your usual patience and kind friends. Thank you. I also want to take this moment to thank my cabinet colleagues, all of them, for their support throughout the year, and in addition to call my thanks also to the Chief Secretary, the Attorney General, the Financial Secretary, and the Chief Technical Officer for their indefatigable hard work in support of the government's policies and objectives. Above all, truly, truly indefatigable. These are extraordinary times, Mr. Speaker, and they are the extraordinary people that have been able to count on every minute of every day to deliver to Gibraltar in each of their areas in this massive list. Truly, Gibraltar, Mr. Speaker. The presentation of representation of the numbers in a graphic and more intelligible form are Ernest Thompson, Stephen Rosales, Nancy Vegas, Carl Lima, and Charles Sanders, as well as many others, to make it possible for us to account for complete transparency and clarity to the South and to the taxpayers generally. I don't think people realize how much care and diligence they put into ensuring that the numbers we report are entirely accurate. I must also extend similar thanks to all others at the Ministry of Finance and the Her Majesty of Treasury. I thank them on behalf of the whole nation for their precise and careful work. So, of course, Speaker, my team and the press office, the 18 that number 16, themselves and treatment for the day, and ensure that whatever happens, I have a smile on my face every day and get to hold the message out to the world. So we are leaving the EU or joining us, whoever is in power in Spain, and whatever other challenges the world may throw in our political direction, nothing faces my number 16. Thanks to all of them for their genuine human support to me in these great days. I have political responsibility for our department, which I have not gone through until today. I have been required because of the juncture in which we find ourselves to analyze some areas in greater depth than others. I have not wanted to keep the house for longer than I have to. It's also unfair for me not to report on the excellent work which has been done in the country, in the drug and alcohol services, in the civil service and legislation office, in industrial relations and public sector HR, and in the Border and Coast Guard agency, and indeed to explain more deeply what is happening in the income tax office and the central region. I will therefore need a detailed paper before the House that I sit down that will set out the progress in these departmental areas, all for Mr. Speaker. I would also highlight one thing, Mr. Speaker. I have been sent in one department, Mr. Speaker, in service this year, on a young customs officer, Community, who passed away on active duty at the age of 30. The government is considering the aggressive customs by death to ensure that he was adequately remembered. So, Mr. Speaker, as I said when I went to speak some 2 hours ago, this is a great subject. And there are two ways of doing a great subject. One is austerity. The other is the social. Our is investment to stimulate continued growth. Investment in public services to ensure that the public services that our citizens and businesses require is there to be provided. In health and care, in education, in the provision of welfare for the most vulnerable in our community, in sport and in housing. This is a great budget which will not rely on austerity measures. There are no cuts even at some point. It will rely instead on investment as the necessary stimulus for our economy. And will also rely on responsibility, personal responsibility, to provide for ourselves and others by contributing more to social insurance. Because Brexit is not a walk in the park. Although thanks to the hard work of the Brexit team and government as a whole, there have been no Brexit shock for our economy. And because we figure out what is worth our time, our responsibility, our opportunity, we took charge. We went farther than ever, we took calm control and delivered an excellent result for generations to come. We were not found wanting, and we did not fail to alter. We did not put our personal interests or interests first. We have no regard for our political interests at all. We considered nothing of our reliance. We will give nothing away from our sovereignty, but we will continue to deliver the prosperous future that we must ensure is there for our children. And to do that, to guarantee that, and to have the peace of mind that we will not falter, we must take some measures to fine-tune and balance. In doing so, we demonstrate that we are ready for the challenge and up to the demands of this historic moment in the affairs of our nation. While keyboard warriors criticize from the comfort of their keyboards, we are out in the real world, fighting to go to this corner. Mr. Speaker, for Gibraltar, Brexit may be all the same. In 1 month, we will have left the European Union. But in partnership with Britain, we have managed to reach the waters carefully and successfully. We have turned our sails when we have had to, and we have run our engines full steam ahead when we have been that we had to. This was the moment of our peace with great destiny, and it was the moment when we looked destiny in the eye and we were equal to our task and challenge. Our time of reckoning came, but few reckoned with which it had been. This is a Brexit budget, but a budget for Brexit success, Mr. Speaker. A careful, forward balance between caution and optimism, between prudence and investment. But a Brexit budget that requires no cuts and no austerity, thanks to the way we have delivered success and growth in our past 7 years in office. A crucial effort to ensure that we have not just for our departure from the European Union. Fundamentally, because despite our services, we have to ensure we remain able to discharge all our responsibilities with purposes to come in the future too. Because that is what is required of the modern, mature, post-colonial community. Built on the work of all the others who have come before us, and 30 years after the Gibraltarian first took the financial loan. In 30 years after we moved from an economy of dependence, we moved to an age of self-awareness that sees us with the self-confidence to succeed in new markets and the digital economy. and our leaders and people think that greater success are won. But it must be worth it, because there will be no free ride, no space for freedom, no time for those who want to drive their way out of pulling their way. Because the challenge of Brexit is there for all of us, not some of us. And as we leave the European Union, that is the challenge for the future. As the today's speaker, I want to end my remarks exactly as another socialist chief minister did in 1989, when we face our challenge by telling the House that the budget I'm presenting today, the estimate of expenditure, the commitment to infrastructure, is an indication that we are meeting that challenge head on, with commitment, with commitment, with hard work, and with confidence of success. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I commend you to the Honourable the Leader of the Opposition. Mr. Speaker, this is my budget contribution as we write that Parliament is in the opposition. It is a privilege and a great honour to lead the opposition in this House on behalf of the people of Gibraltar. Mr. Speaker, before I appoint you the substance of my address, we must of course recognise the work of the part of the House for my fellow Francis Cardinal Daniel Report. And I'd also like to refer to the work of Chief Minister Elizabeth with respect to comments in relation to Capital House. We wish most of the Minister of the House wish to talk to as well. Mr. Speaker, if I may, and before setting out our story, we have an initial observation as to the description of this year's budget. The Chief Minister describes the people's budget as a present budget. I have to hand it to him, Mr. Speaker. The Honourable Chief Minister and our estimation is a consummate spin doctor. But the message of our understanding wanted, and Mr. Speaker, the meeting is set. People have spoke testimony, the buzzwords have fallen on deaf ears, and whoever intends to write his speeches for him will soon get out of the door. The comments, Mr. Speaker, are no fool. This is not a brilliant budget. This is a big, dry budget. The Chief Minister claims to be prudent, he claims to be cautious, he claims to be a safe, fair land, if I was going to address that he spends wisely, Mr. Speaker. Could you address the department set up for public efficiency, Mr. Speaker, to create the illusion that our money, the people's money, is cheaper in his hands? Mr. Speaker, this is all part of the big lie government. The direct evidence for this is the Chief Minister's so-called revolution in education. The fact of the matter is that the £52 million contract for the two secondary schools at Waterford, Mr. Speaker, isn't included in this year's estimate. Why not, Mr. Speaker? Let's not forget that the contract is not included in the last of the two schools, and therefore, the cost of each secondary school is very likely to exceed £75 million. How can this be a budget, Mr. Speaker, when stocks are £5 million Waterford, labelled material, the decimal size of the federal machinery operating 24/7 at an enormous cost to the public. The public is devoid of any real consultation from those who will actually use those schools. Embarrassingly, then, Mr. Speaker, he then gives to anyone who would care to listen, all MPs, whatever, and even the opposition complain that they are moving too far. Mr. Speaker, he repeated it again in his address this morning. There is nothing remotely impressive about this budget, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, the Chief Minister, as you well know, is a big spender, and his cabinet is a big spender of federal power money. Mr. Speaker, the GFP Liberal government are fully aware and included. Mr. Speaker, it has finally dawned on the Honourable Gentleman that he's been reckless with our money, Mr. Speaker. It took him 7 years of spend, 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 and now the public, the taxpayer, and business, and indeed future generations, will be saddled with debt, debt, and no debt. As he was saying to Mr. Speaker, what he and his government attempt in a desperate scramble to spin this as a consequence of Brexit. We do not accept this, Mr. Speaker, and neither do the people listening or watching this debate. Mr. Speaker, he contribution of 7 years of GDP growth at 10% year on year, unprecedented levels of growth. He forgets, Mr. Speaker, to mention unprecedented levels of debt. Mr. Speaker, in 2011, the GCLP Liberal Alliance were elected on their now infamous time for change or new dawn manifesto, promising all things to all men. To their credit, Mr. Speaker, and at any level, who has been charged with the huge responsibility of making the public affairs of Gibraltar, they are several projects and institutes which we have there as servants of the people of our community have welcomed. We have been constructive on the need to do, and we have been robustly critical in areas where we struck with some of the business that this community has been and is being taken in the wrong direction. Mr. Speaker, one such striking example is the management and administration of our public finances. Everyone understands the message. It's your money, and the government must properly and transparently account for what they are doing with your money. The institution is even more acute now, but it's clear to our community that the government is passing most of its debt as banks and intentionally hiding the true level of our debt from the people. I now turn to make the position of the Majority's opposition abundantly clear. Mr. Speaker, we will not vote in favour of this budget because it fails to present a clear, transparent, accurate, and unambiguous reflection of the state of our public finances. We consider it a great dereliction of our duty as representatives of this community to condone and support a budget which is fundamentally opaque and which handcuffs elected representatives for properly and effectively scrutinising the public finances of this community. Mr. Speaker, it will no doubt be said in reply that voting against the budget is repugnant, wrong, and will suffer detriment by throwing the hands of Gibraltar's enemies. What utter nonsense, Mr. Speaker. Nothing can be further from the truth. No one buys that juvenile playground argument. It is true that parliamentary practice convention has meant that the opposition has traditionally voted in favour of the budget. But as the Chief Minister was able to teach me last time we were in this house, practice and convention change, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, it is not unusual in the practice for opposition to vote against the budget. It happens the world over. There are, in our view, very good reasons to depart from this procedure to practice. Mr. Speaker, the point is this. We in opposition do not know how the public money is being spent. And we know, Mr. Speaker, we disagree with what they're saying about. Mr. Speaker, 2017-18 has been the Chief Minister's tariff holiday. 2018-2019 is shaping up to be no better for him. And well, Mr. Speaker, all the things have come to end. Because the Chief Minister is living off borrowed time. Speaker, I'm not fond of quoting rappers in this house, Mr. Speaker, but I couldn't resist this one. When the Chief Minister and his ministers all sat when the UVIP government came close at the GMS this year, they should reflect very carefully to their headliner Stormzy warning in his chat video. You're getting way too big for your boots, you're never too big for your boots. Mr. Speaker, the Chief Minister's so-called 2015 Strongest Foundation is suffering significant structural damage, resulting no doubt from the inherent weak foundations upon which it was built. Budget is now becoming the excuse for our win, and we have been treated this morning for a budget, or as we like to call it, a big round budget. It is clear that the Chief Minister no longer has his finger on the pulse of the community and the day-to-day issues that affect hard-working families. Domestic issues have been on the main ignored using the Brexit excuse. I hope, Minister, that the General Judgment's focus might be on Brexit, but the world did not stop turning on the 23rd of June 2016, and we must carry on, Mr. Speaker. The General Judgment is everything support, and although not on my support, the government's condition is serious. The government government has done more to address the security concerns of working families, a vulnerable and possibly young people. Last year, the Children's Support Support developed the proof of the money to support working families, young people, and the elderly and disabled. We achieved these refugees, Mr. Speaker, that objective. And the additional contributions to the development of the Speaker on the Appropriation Bill, intimately build their respective federal responsibilities, in particular, into our federal public finances to the overall treasury, will address and prevent any rather detail the numbers, where the Honourable Mr. Speaker will track the historic concept, which is ready to the current financial position that our community finds itself in. Mr. Speaker, I have a duty to the people that have elected us to hold the government to account, particularly at budget time. As both the appropriation bill fail entirely to provide the public with an accurate, comprehensive, and transparent account of our public finances. The government has for 7 years consistently denigrated and destroyed any form of oversight of our public finances, hidden debt from public view, and rendered our commitment due to our questions on public finances from the opposition, and promoted a system where we have been more capable of quickly and effectively submitting the management of our public finances by the government to parliamentary scrutiny. Moreover, you are tuning across our community to listen or watch this debate from where we work. I am trying to have to say to each one of them that there is very little one can do as my elected opposition to uncover a mass of prison debt that will power out the next of our children and to promise something for generations to come. But there are, Mr. Speaker, some indicators, even from the scale of information that the government has provided. But what we have been able to do for them, Mr. Speaker, despite the mistake that we have been referred to by the Honourable Mr. Smith himself, our real fact is that in the prisons, estimated to be probably 27,850,000 for 31st of March 2019. Our net debt is rising to 339,900,000 in 2019. Our revenue is lower at 635,849,000 at March 2018. Our cash balances are decreasing from 127,600,000 in 2017 to 96,000,000 in 2019. To our community. Money power has been down, the cost of energy price is going up, debt is rising, and our money demand is down, Mr. Speaker. The government is clearly not on time to honour their promise to the people to get net public debt below 300 million. The Honourable Roy Kirkland will in detail assess the consequences of these startling figures, Mr. Speaker, but it is clear for the first time that the GOP Liberal government will be running a deficit. And the first time the donation to the fair would be at its lowest. The headline is represented for a critically viable training, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, it is important sometimes to actually reflect on what the Chief Minister said in the New Dawn Manifesto in 2011. Mr. Speaker, when we were in government, the Honourable Senator Donald, you were in the as he was there, said, on the submission of this government's own figure, we are already at least 480 million in debt in terms of gross debt. Gross debt is the relevant figure for analysis of national debt that you must refer to any publication considering the national debt of any country. That works out as £61,000 per man, woman, and child in Gibraltar. In 1996, it was £3,000 per man, woman, and child. The committee then referred to that level of debt, which is now quintupled, and then made all round the net of future humanitarian. Mr. Speaker, fast forward to 2018-19, we have a situation where approximately 65% of indirect debt is now hidden from public scrutiny. The change to the legal debt limit and the overallowable debt-to-GDP ratio instead of using debt with revenue coupled with hidden debt of massive proportions indicates more concern that the picture being presented by the government as to the true level of public debt is entirely false and misleading. Mr. Speaker, our analysis concludes that our total gross debt level is £1.248 billion. As you will remember, in the 2011 the election campaign, that you would recommend to them captivating the people, and to this to by saying that the gross national debt says that every man, woman, and child will expose the most around their net to £16,000 each. Well, it's the problem there, and even with the people of the same logic, namely the gross national debt, every man, woman, and child will be having 37,000 weeks down around the net of our children and grandchildren. The truth of this is that we have fallen double the level of expenditure of this community from $16,000 when we think of the gross national debt in 2011 to over £30,000 for every one of our people. Mr. Speaker, when the truth is that our debt is stored in food, then everything will be debt, debt, and even more debt. Mr. Speaker, moving from the debt position, the majority of our state's rating and conference relation has provided our community with a renewed sense that the new Spanish government will be more receptive to our position. Although the debt is suffering on the formation of the new Spanish government, we remain hopeful that dialogue and cooperation for the benefit of our community and the right example will prevail. We have been very clear as to what our vision is for Gibraltar and what we will be seeking to achieve. One, a restoration of the financial process of the settlement. However, the problem matters that affect Gibraltar is unacceptable. In the presence of the spectrum, there will have to be a realistic discussion to seek to achieve Gibraltar's objectives without making any concession on sovereignty, jurisdiction, and control. Two, freedom of movement and borders, and single market access. Mr. Speaker, we continue to press the government for the restoration of the trilateral form of the United Kingdom and Kingdom of Spain to ensure that our rights, freedoms, and interests are fully protected in the context of Brexit. Mr. Speaker, Brexit, it is in the interest of Gibraltar as a whole. We have consistently and regularly communicated our position in that we stand ready to speak. Briefings of the next meeting are received to very soon to persuade those on this side of the House that the Chief Minister is interested in speaking our views on the challenges that we face as a community. Mr. Speaker, the public expects for both government and opposition to work together in order to ensure the best possible outcome for the people of Gibraltar. Briefings from the opposition are infrequent and contain limited information which cannot be released to the public today. How can Mr. Speaker work together? Mr. Speaker, turning to my more specific responsibility, the declarations have been a year, Mr. Speaker, of industrial strife from the Chief Minister and his colleagues on that side of the House. The last 5 months have been a very, very hard for the government. In the formulation of industrial relations. The uncertainty about the future of the contract and municipal business centers continues until the end of last week, and people forget the balance in this government calling for an end to uncertainty by the Commission and its master services members. We've all read the pre-post announcement of the award of the premium contract. Mr. Speaker, we will closely follow this award and support the best possible solution. The last 5 months have also seen the UK workforce of 400 strong struggling a lot out of long spending concerns regarding monopolies on farm workers. It's enough campaign to send a clear and loud message that morale within the service is at an all time low in the UK. It is clear to many within our community that the use of the farm workers is by the prevention through the back door. It will be recalled, Mr. Speaker. And in 2011 general election, GSO Peter from Manifesting Stations, the government will work and services will be carried out by direct labour, which includes employees and representatives on government health conditions. There will be no private regulation of government departments. That night, Mr. Speaker, the board of the Coast Guard to conduct an action on the front end of a similar issue on the use of supply labour. The related male brand owned spider is a story which keeps on giving. Mr. Speaker, concerns are being raised in the community and highlighted in relation to Mount Vernon and its relationship with Miller. Mr. Speaker, we have described the level of contract workers in the public service as unprecedented. The effect cannot be underestimated. 39% of central labour force is employed via recruitment and government or agency. Mr. Speaker, the Commission has been asking questions of the government in relation to the use of companies to increase the carry-out labour or supply work. workers into different sectors of the public service for a long time now. The practice of recruitment either endless labor or supply workers to work alongside permanent civil service or public service firms on different terms is pervasive and one which then we say erodes workers' rights as well as security of employment. Organizing your labor force in this way can seriously affect the quality of the service provided to the public. We have also said that these practices raise serious questions from questioning accountability, transparency, quality and value for money, and the controllers of public contracts. These are all issues, Mr. Speaker, that require serious examination and the end of the work being done by the government. To us rather than reactively fighting the skills gap. We need to continue thinking we're going to be using the vibrant environment for fintech to grow is good for our sector economy. But we must ensure that we encourage people to start startups or more advanced business entrepreneurs that we just have faith in the knowledge that we can grow our own talent in partnership with business so that we can become a center of growth. Fintech is proving to be a highly competitive environment with many sophisticated needs which is moving quickly into that space. The long-standing results in this company has to be in the lack of skilled workforce. That is what we spend ourselves about hyper criticism against these people. Mr. Speaker, in my political commit, Amazon, and this is my colleagues, Amazon is the number one complaint area. Mr. Speaker, this year we focused a large part of our outreach campaign on meeting the many representatives of the state formed the Boston State. It's fair to say that after 7 years of Duke administration, they feel very disappointed. The DSA is still waiting for 35 days to be installed. We have a fourth problem towards Castle this week, Castle Tracer, and now there has started to elect with little or no work being done on the building. The numbers will affect thousands, Mr. Speaker, and appears to be the never ending but further thought that the security of our housing estate. Which is simply borne out by the people of the community and the residents of the Northern Ireland to meet the people of the community. Mr. Speaker, our housing estates are a part and soul of our community, and 7 years on, the government will continue to turn by full activity, neglect, and spending to get the job done. It is simply unacceptable for the government to take 7 years to complete work to our housing estate. I am sure that we will now have to endure all the excuses under the sun. On the Minister and the Chief Minister, or they will no doubt play the blame game once again. The public by all of their excuses, Mr. Speaker, and actually must be taken to save the job that they promised 7 weeks ago. Mr. Speaker, recent announcements announced by the Ministry in relation to the establishment and register of residential tenancy are, in principle, a subject to a comprehensive review, welcomed by those on the side of the House. It is wrong and an abuse for everyone. In her based on the need to have secured a government rental to rent out that property, the practice is a fine and should be stopped. It is equally wrong, as a matter of principle, that those who derive a rental income from their homes do not declare that income to the income tax department, as it is from those who rent out their homes in breach in terms of the underlying. This is not the time for public statements on how we have done this speaking and how we will use the future. That letter, a key policy document, which Parliament's general election will give them the opportunity to consider. But honestly, we believe that the system is not fit for purpose. We need a radical shake up and rethink entirely the way in which we allocate government homes and access to opportunity for government to run the experience. So we will reflect on the federal strategy in respect of the affordable homes that will purchase in the 4 years and make comments to public and to the court. I have asked the Minister for Housing and the Chief Minister several times to explain why the government have not allowed the building of homes to rent them. And I've been treated to the usual no reply, and an announcement will be made in due course. Mr. Speaker, there is a real need, which is not only expressed by action for housing, but spread in families. What is the secret about this, Mr. Speaker? And we need to give hope to those who are struggling. In relation to rent arrears, the last 5 months, the government's record on recovery is appalling. In March 2017, arrears were just over £5 million. At the end of March, the people estimated the arrears to £4,995,443. And for them, the problem was clearly under control. At the end of April, the Honourable Lady told me that the arrears to £4,829,392. In January, February, March, and April of last year, the figures gravitated around £4,879,000 to £4,879,000 to $4,875,000. Because the system is not fit for purpose. There is also systemic abuse in the housing system, which must be urgently addressed by government. We need to remedy the poor as housing and protecting and using marketing interventions alongside a range of initiatives that make this community friendly, accessible, and affordable fair. For instance, speaker, how is it right that when an international community of 17 parents for the need for donations and social housing in order to slowly creep up in our pay system to have the opportunity to buy into the government's bonuses for the allocation of government back in the future? I have heard in many cases when children leave the university, parents ensure that their children are on the list. So what is their full-time education with the speaker when you're at home? The speaker was on earth going on the last week of the time. On that note, they are currently a total of 1,350 applicants on the pre and housing list, as well as a small number on the central list. Only 69 people have been allocated back in 2015 so far, and the final emerging population. How does the government intend to cater for demand and to the evolving and changing circumstances? Where contingency are in place for a hard Brexit? Where is the investigatory law enforcement process to minimize the abuse of government housing? I know the Honourable Minister don't try and help, but we must recognise that the system is fundamentally broken, Mr. Speaker. We need to operate a system based on real needs. We need to prepare for families, small and large, young to know the parents, the elderly, key workers, and those with disabilities. The system does need a degree of flexibility, but above all, it must be fair and cater for the needs of those most in need. Speaker, on the 25th of November 2015, some 2.5 years ago, I made a promise to those who entrusted their votes to my colleagues and I that we would speak for those people in our community who felt distant from politics and politicians. I have promised that where I am, I will help. If I can't, I will say that I am here to listen. It has become apparent to me, Mr. Speaker, that the Chief Minister wants to use this opportunity to debate the appropriation bill not just to report to the House on public finances of our country, but the state of the economy generally and our political future facing. Almost 2 years, Mr. Speaker, after my election, I was asked by the Liberal Party in 2015 to lead the parliamentary party in this House. After the Honourable Dermot Pinkham stepped down. It's a great honour and privilege to be able to serve my community in the Senate in which I'm in whatever capacity I'm asked to serve. It is, of course, right at this juncture that the staff has given to the crucial role played by the Honourable Dermot Pinkham in driving the party forward in opposition after 16 years in government. Mr. Speaker, opposition politics, I hope one of the staff will know, is a hard, difficult, and isolating endeavour. But in less than it will be one of the best experiences that this will have. It can also be crucial, but it is also rewarding for each one of the service has. Serving our community in key domestic areas of housing, employment, health, security, social services, and care, and understanding the part of our community has been a privilege and an honour. Mr. Speaker, it has also been an honour to me because despite the constant strain from the benches that drive the new door of propaganda machine, endemic and growing discontent for the public as to the government's administration of our public affairs. Not one day goes past that each of us on this side of the House receives a complaint about this government's mismanagement of the domestic agenda. The discontent, of course, Mr. Speaker, is also coming from the government's own supporters, and they are becoming very vocal. Mr. Speaker, I have a little more demonstration for our various contributions that we are fundamentally at odds with the government. In respect of the substance, or lack thereof, and the form of the appropriation bill. Mr. Speaker, to end my contribution, voting against the budget is not a decision to be taken lightly, but it stands as an important message to the public for whose money we are responsible for, that we as our elected representatives genuinely believe that the financial underpinning of our public services is being threatened by the bad management of our public finances, and we on this side of the House will not support. I'll return to the previous afternoon.